Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah, if you're America first, then you'd want Israel as your ally.
We have a long fight ahead of us.
Here I am.
Here I am.
Here I am.
And here I am with Shai Davidai.
My guest today is a writer, producer, two-time Emmy Award-winning actress, and co-founder of the October 7 Coalition. I just professed to her before we started recording that I am nervous, but I'm going to get through this. but here I am with Patricia Heaton.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Shai.
Thank you for coming. I have to tell you before we start everything, around, I think it was September or August 2024, I was participating in this rally. It was called Demonstrate Hope, Not Hate. And it was about interfaith in Washington Square Park. And the rally started with a recording of you that was played because you couldn't make it at the time. Mm-hmm. And there was something so special because I would say there were about 500, 600 people. And everyone was quiet. And your voice was ringing. And I don't think I've ever seen a disembodied voice captivate so many people and then get such a, such an applause
gosh.
At the end. So I actually recently watched that video again. It was really inspiring. Patricia, we're going to start with the way we start most episodes, which is, Patricia Heaton, what are you fighting for?
Basic civilization, I think, decency, morality, Western values, freedom, democracy, peace that everyone could live in peace, could practice their faith in freedom without fear, could live their lives in freedom without fear. And that we can all live together and be who we are authentically and be safe.
So that's a lot of stuff. What's the fire of it that feeds this passion, this fight?
You know, a lot of people have asked me how I got involved in this space or why I got involved in this space. And I've had to try to think about it because it surprised me. My response to October 7th, it didn't surprise me in the way that, any normal person should have been completely horrified at the barbaric events that took place on October 7th. But I assumed that everyone in the United States would rise up and demand justice and demand an end to that. And we didn't really see that. What we saw was a very a vocal amount of people on campuses and in large cities rise up in support of what Hamas had done. And it was so shocking. And I guess, I'm Irish Catholic. There's sort of a fighter in me, I think, because of my Irish heritage, although it's really awful to see how the Irish have responded to this. I had no idea that they were so anti-Israel, the Irish, let's say the government. I don't know how people over there feel, but terrible government there. I was shocked. But I'm kind of a person that runs toward a fight instead of away. And, so God gives you those things and they're for his use, right? So I've just found that this sort of inflamed my heart. I had been praying for a couple years since the pandemic, what did God want me to do? Because I wasn't acting. And I'm a person that needs something to do. I'm not good at leisure if I don't have like a normal job. I'm best either taking a vacation right after I finished work or, or before. And so I can't just kind of sit around and paint or draw or play the guitar. I don't know. I can't do that. So anyway, I feel like this was his answer, and I feel like he'd been preparing me my whole life for something like this. I've always had in my heart an affinity for Jewish people, and one of my best friends from college, who's still a dear friend, was, my friend Robin from New York, whose dad worked in the garment industry, manufacturing shoes. And she came to Ohio State University and lived across the hall from me. And she had a fur coat that she got at her bat mitzvah.
Where did you grow up?
At Cleveland, Ohio. Uh-huh. And so, she was such a queen. And I was like, this has to be my friend. She has to be my friend. And we've stayed good friends. I moved to New York. I had so many Jewish friends, then moved to LA, many more Jewish friends. And one experience I had in Los Angeles really sort of shocked me, which is I was at a gym on a treadmill, and there was a very elderly woman on the treadmill next to me. And when I looked over, she had numbers tattooed on her wrist. And though I grew up knowing about World War II, my dad served in World War II. We all knew about Anne Frank. There was common knowledge that, the Holocaust happened and never again. We all shared that sentiment. And to see sort of history right next to me on this treadmill was like a gut punch. And so I think that's just sort of always stayed with me. And when October 7th happened, and I saw that Hamas body cam footage that they were gleefully posting on social media, I was astonished, and I just assumed that every church around me, I live in Nashville, there's many churches, would have Israeli flags planted on their lawn. I just assumed everyone felt this way. And I was shocked to find out that that was not true, and that there were people for different reasons, maybe not knowing what to say, not knowing what to do, or they had different, a theology that kind of shocked me, that didn't include Jewish people. And for Christians, I don't understand that, because Jesus was Jewish. This is the root of our faith. There's no Christianity without Judaism. So, and that just sort of activated me. I had reached out after October 7th to all my Jewish friends and texted them and said, how are you doing? And they all said, not good, and you're the only one that's asked.
Wow.
And so that also shocked me.
Can I ask you, you take that for granted that mm-hmm. you reached out, but what compelled you to reach out? How did you even know? Some people would say, like, you're observing something happening 3,000 miles away. How did you know to reach out to your Jewish friends here in the United States?
I'm not sure. I just thought, and some of it was kind of like awkward. I thought, should I even say anything? I was reaching out to my dermatologist even, saying, how are you doing? And I just knew this was a massive thing. And, prior to October 7th, whenever I would see news about the Middle East in a newspaper or online, you just turn the page, because this has been going on forever and ever, and I can't keep anybody straight, these different factions. But October 7th was a whole different thing. And I saw a connection to the United States and to Christians, what was happening to the Jewish people. I just felt like we are next in line. And so, it's not 100% altruistic. I mean, this is going to affect all of us, and it's starting to do that around the world.
And why has it been so difficult to explain that? And it seems like, you had your moment of shock, which I think many of us did, including Jews or non-Jews alike, right after October 7. Mm-hmm. But maybe I'm a bit naive in that regard. I thought, okay, so there's a moment of shock. Now we're going to explain what happened, share some information, and then we're going to get back on track.
Right.
And it hasn't panned out that way.
Not only that, I thought you know, after the first year, after October 7th, I thought, okay, kind of like you, I thought things will settle and people will get it and they'll understand. We've all been out there trying to share this message, this information about what Israel does, what Israel stands for, how much they tried to help Palestinians. They live amongst Muslims and Christians and Jews in Israel. And it seems to have gotten worse. And especially since Charlie Kirk was assassinated, there was sort of a moment of sort of unity and clarity. And then it seems to, the anti-Semitism seems to have exploded even more. And it's shocking. I personally, as a Catholic, know that there is a spiritual element to this, that there's that evil exists, and it's they're trying to take down, you know, what's good in the world. And I think for me, with all the activism, what we have to do is pray, because there is so much that is beyond our control. And when you see the evil, I know you've been to the Nova site. I've been to the Nova site and to the kibbutzim and saw the remains of that horror. It's so overwhelming, the evil, and you can feel so small and so incapable of making a difference. But as my partner in 07C has said, she left Israel the day before October 7th. She had a dream that God told her, you need to get out. And she came back. And the last thing she grabbed from a little tourist shop was a mug that said Hineni on it. Mm-hmm. And that's...
Here I am.
And here I am. Send me, right? And so that was sort of the inspiration for us to start doing something. My verse that popped out at me when all this stuff started happening was St. Paul in the New Testament says, put on the full armor of God so that when the day of evil comes, you do everything you can to stand. And after you've done everything, stand. And so that's inspired me. I know I personally can't really do anything, but if I'm willing to put myself out there and be used as a force for good in the world, then that's what we have to do. And I can't accomplish everything, but God is the one that uses his people to save his people.
It's interesting because you, first of all, I think your description of feeling so small in the face of such abject evil is relatable. But for me, the flip side of that is feeling so small in the face of incredible heroism. Both the soldiers, both the civilians, and the people that have stood up and spoke up here in the U.S. Like, that also gives you that feeling of smallness, right? So, which is beautiful for me. But you mentioned, you started by saying, you know, sometimes all you can do is pray. But then you ended up by saying, like, standing,
yeah,
showing up.
Yes.
So a lot of people, which I believe, you know, have done this, just prayed.
Yeah.
And we don't even know that they're for us because, and I'm not saying they're not there for us, but because they're for us behind closed doors in churches, synagogues, maybe mm-hmm. even mosques. But you did more than just pray. You showed up. Do you remember the moment where you decided, I'm going to put on the armor, I'm going to stand, I'm going to do something more than the private prayer?
Well, it was a transition, and it started with the question, why? Why were people not standing up? We live in Nashville, and we know so many people that have been to Israel and love Israel and support Israel, but they don't really know their Jewish neighbors at home when they come back. So my partner Elizabeth and I talked to some leaders, and we said, how can we encourage other Christian leaders to stand up? And first we had to talk to our Jewish community. And so there's a wonderful pastor named Don Finto who has been standing for Israel for many years. He's 96 years old now. He was in one of the first groups that went over after October 7th. And he composed a letter that was signed by 148 pastors that we sent to all the synagogues and to the Jewish Federation and all our Jewish leaders in Nashville, saying, we're here for you. The sins of the past of Christians against Jews, you know, we ask for forgiveness for that, and we're here for you in any way we can be. So that started it. And I think the Jewish community was really grateful to know that we were there. And then we decided to bring everybody together, and we had a unity event at a church in Nashville. About 250 pastors and Jewish leaders showed up. And it was just to bring people together and say, we're all here for each other, whatever you need. And once the word got out that there were Christians standing, we started getting calls from different people. And so we created this October 7th Coalition, or O7C, as we call it. And we started getting a lot of requests. So, for instance, the consulate in Atlanta, the Israeli consulate in Atlanta, asked us if we would sponsor a screening of the Hamas body cam footage because it had not been shown in the South. Right. So we rented a movie theater, and we had about 124 Christian leaders come to see that. So we've been doing that kind of thing around the country, bringing Jewish people and Christian people together and having unity dinners, trying to support hostage families. We sponsored a program with a synagogue in Nashville, a musical program called the Promise Sessions, where Israeli soldiers who had just finished their service but were also musicians, we flew them to Nashville and we recorded their music for them. And we debuted it at the Nova exhibit in Los Angeles, so we had them sing there. So we're trying to just do where God calls us and where he needs us, and to keep the messaging out there. I think we got over a billion hits on our social media last year for October 7th Coalition. And so, you know, we just keep plugging away and trying to educate people and enable them to find different ways to express themselves. One of the programs we did was called My Zuza, Your Zuza. And it was...
I should say, for people, maybe non-Jews listening, it's, mm-hmm. it's a player word on the mezuzah, which is affixed to every Jewish home's doorpost.
Yeah. Yes, it's a little like oblong case that holds a scripture in it to bless the home and bless everyone in it. And around October 7th or after October 7th, college students who had a mezuzah on their door, they were being vandalized. They were being smashed. They were being ripped off and thrown out. And so we thought of it as a Spartacus moment, like if everybody had a mezuzah, nobody would know who was Jewish and who wasn't. And so we were trying to get, you know, influencers to participate. We couldn't get anybody to do it. So we just kind of, we happened to be going on Fox and Friends.
Do you know why? I want to hear about the Fox and Friends, but yeah. Do you know why?
There's just no response. I mean, it's a mystery to me how people don't see that what is happening is important to their lives. But I don't criticize anyone because I didn't expect myself to be in this space. I feel like God just called me here. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if we could answer that question, like what is the key to getting people standing up, this would have been over a year ago.
But I'm sure you've had... some private conversation, and of course, anonymous, you know, don't want to call out anyone, but I'm sure you've had private conversations with people either in Hollywood or just in Nashville or mm-hmm. wherever it is. And you've had the opportunity to ask them.
Yeah, I mean, I'll explain.
What do they tell themselves?
Well, I remember explaining to one young person about what was happening, and she was just like, oh, that's interesting. Like there was not a heart connection or even a mind connection. It was like I was giving her random information. And another friend that said, yeah, that's great. But thinking that I was maybe, you know, getting too involved, like it was taking over my life, which it has, to be honest, you know. But there just doesn't seem to be an intellectual or heart connection. And it might be that they were just like I was, and they still are. They don't see what it has to do with them. You know, and I think Americans generally, we're such a huge country, we don't often see our connection to the rest of the world as far as impact goes. So I feel like that's a part of it. That's just, you know, a lot of Americans haven't traveled outside of the country. This is not a criticism. It's just sort of factual that you just don't connect, you know. And I don't know what it's going to take for people to connect. I don't know. And so we just keep putting
but
it
then,
out there.
So you weren't able to get the people, like let's say the big influencers, to connect. But then you went on TV.
So we went on Fox and Friends and we said, let's just announce it. Let's just pretend we have this movement happening. And we announced it. We should have informed the myzuza.org people that we were going to announce it. We kind of forgot to do that. And I think their website crashed. I really didn't think anybody would respond, but we got a huge response to it, both positive and a little bit of negative, because there were people that felt offended and thought that we were sort of like, you know, culturally, what's the word?
Like appropriating.
Appropriating this very, you know, sacred thing. But we actually mostly got a great response to it. And the government of Israel said we were one of the top 10 most effective campaigns that year in 2024, the MyZuza YourZuza campaign. And we did get a lot of people to put mezuzahs on their doors and to post it. And it opened up a really interesting discussion because you know, I learned a lot from it. We were certainly not trying to abrogate anything. And but people really, the people that want to do something, they want like an actual tactile thing they could do, you know, and this really provided that for people. So,
and I think it does more than that, right? When you do something, either attend a rally or a protest, affix something to your doorpost, even, and I see you're wearing both the dog tag for mm-hmm. the hostages, but also like a Magen David. It's a reminder.
Yes.
It's a reminder of something else that is out there. It forces you to think every time you come home and every time you leave home, like, oh, it's a little reminder of it. Jewish people are experiencing so-and-so right now.
Yeah, and I think until you talk to Jewish people, you don't understand what it feels like for them. A friend of mine who lives in Barcelona says he's going to leave Barcelona because it's gotten really bad. And he said that he goes out at night, like at 1 a.m., with a spray bottle and a scraper and scrapes off all the posters, anti-Israel, anti-Zionist posters in his neighborhood so that his kids don't have to see it when they walk to school in the morning, that there's so much of it that he tries to go out and mitigate it. And he's not feeling safe anymore in Barcelona, so he's going to be leaving. And there was another post about being Jewish in Italy and what it's like to get up in the morning. There's now shops that say, no Zionists, we don't serve Zionists, on a coffee shop or a shoe repair place. And that the graffiti on the subway is all anti-Israel. Everywhere you go, it's everywhere. I don't think your average American understands that that's what Jewish people are going through.
I don't have many moments where I break, partially mm-hmm. because I can't afford to break down. There's a lot of fight to do. But there was one moment where my son was very excited. We put together a birdhouse. And we affix it to a tree, you know, in our neighborhood. And he was decorating it. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, why don't you do a little like Magen David, like a Star of David? And he said, I don't want people to vandalize my treehouse.
How old is he?
He's 9.
He was
8 at the time. And that was a moment that really broke me because, you know, I thought that we are living in the adult world where we see these things, but the kids are
insulated
from it, right? And to know that he knows
yes.
that there is a risk. Now, maybe 9 out of 10 times nothing will happen, but he knows that there is a risk that could happen to something that he loves. That shattered me.
That's heartbreaking.
And I think a lot of, first of all, I think no kid should ever, of any ethnicity, of any religion, of any group, should ever have that experience. Mm. But I think that's an experience that if you're not Jewish, you may not even think that happens.
Right, you can't comprehend that you would have to live that way.
So I know you've had a lot of, you know, somewhat difficulty at the beginning reaching people, but you've been very successful in advocating. And I would say you're not, in my view, you're not advocating for Israel. You're not advocating for Jews. You're advocating for the U.S. You're advocating, like you said, for civilization and democracy, Western values. What has been the reaction from Christians that you've been working with and engaging?
I mean, there's such a huge number of Christian allies. It's really huge, and it's really heartwarming. I mean, the quality of the people I've met in this space has been one of the blessings of this whole debacle, because I just find that these are people who want peace. I was just back in Israel last week, and the joy I've found in the people in Israel, the real living life to the fullest and having gratitude for their lives is such an astonishing response to what has happened. But I realized, like, for Jewish people, this is their whole history of being thrown out of places, and wherever they land, end up thriving and making the most of it and being very successful at it. And so I'm so inspired by that. As I said, I'm always kind of looking for a fight, and I encounter these people who have been through the worst of the worst, and that they still have a gentle spirit. They're still hopeful that there will be peace, you know, and it's a real lesson for me, because I get so angry about everything. So I found that that's really...
You don't look angry.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You ask my husband. Yeah.
You seem very poised when you're dealing with really difficult things.
Yeah, and I mean, I also, you know, the ignorance of people, there's a whole, you know, thing of anti-Semitism that's bubbled up on the right, and it's just so ignorant, and people are saying, we're America first, and I'm like... Yeah, if you're America first, then you'd want Israel as your ally. This is an important relationship for the security of our country and for the security of the Middle East. It's the only democracy amongst all those countries. I don't understand the this sort of isolationist, in that Israel is always singled out, when I think they've gotten, you know, $6 billion in U.S. aid, whereas Ukraine has gotten $13 billion. And every other country gets, you know, we give money to every country. Why is Israel always singled out as this one country who's running America? None of it makes sense. And so I don't understand, like, the vitriol that comes across and the accusations that I'm getting paid by the Israeli government and, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
But I think that those people are bots, so they're not even people. And it's a minority. And what we hope is that more people who are aligned with us, who understand what's going on, who understand the importance of Israel, would speak up, because we all need to hear that, especially Jewish people, but everybody needs to hear it. We need to stand together.
So when you go, and I should say you and your co-founder,
yeah,
of the October 7 Coalition, when you go and you speak to non-Jewish crowds, mm-hmm, Christian crowds, and you do a lot of interfaith work as well, what have you found as the effective path to get people, to use your words, to create the intellectual connection, but also the heart connection?
Yeah, I think, especially when we're speaking to Christians, there's so much in Scripture, in both the Old Testament and the New Testament, that talks about the importance of the relationship spiritually. You know, when you go to Israel, you really feel that connection to who we are as a people. And the response is usually really great. Of course, the people who show up to things are ones that are sympathetic to what you're talking about, and they understand it. You know, so there's like people who are sympathetic, people who are not, and then people who just don't see how it affects them, and they're not involved at all. So, and I get it. I mean, I feel like God sort of singled me out for this particular thing. I'm not sure why. It's like when you ask God to give you something to do, be careful.
Or your wife.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's kind of, And I don't make judgment on anybody else, how they're involved or whether they understand it. It's not anything I was looking for, and it was given to me. And so I can't expect everybody to feel the same way I do. But I think, as you said, it's just important to keep putting it out there. There's just me, but then you multiply that by all the other voices, you, everybody else that's trying to do stuff. And, you know, hopefully it will permeate and penetrate the people in our country.
And one of the things that I've noticed, both when, you know, I've read a lot of your interviews and I've in the 07C website and your materials, but also things that I've just noticed happening, words that keep showing up in the past 2 years, is Judeo-Christian values.
Yes.
What does the term Judeo-Christian values mean to you?
You start with the Ten Commandments, right? That's kind of what we all have used to mutually agree on was the foundation of any civilized society, that we're all created equal before God. And there's a whole list of things you have in the Ten Commandments that create a civil, livable society. And freedom is a big part of that, too. I think that we're able to all abide by these rules while we live our lives in the way that we feel we're called to do. And that comes directly from the Old Testament. And Christianity is an outgrowing of Judaism. Jesus was Jewish. I don't know why we live in a time when we have to remind people that Jesus was Jewish and not Palestinian. This is insane.
I mean, this is, to me, it's an interesting example of just deliberate disinformation, right? Because even if you wanted to argue that Jesus was not Jewish, that he was some sort of Palestinian, it just doesn't add up with the years. The word Palestine, yes, to describe the region came after Jesus's time.
Yes.
So you'd have to come up with a different word. So to me, it's the logic is no longer important to the people spewing out misinformation.
Yes. So,
they used to care about at least having a kernel of truth.
Yes. Isn't that fascinating? I mean, what do you think that's about?
I think because your strength is in your connection is in Christianity having developed from Judaism, or evolved from, or whatever you want to use the word, people that go against that, they have to go at the, where did it start? And they say, well, you know, there's two things they can do. They can pit Jews and Christians against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that happening,
yes,
sometimes. Or they can say, no, let's cut the relationship at the core. And that way no one will be susceptible to help the Jews.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are those values for you? The Judeo-Christian values?
Well, as I said, I feel like our country runs on that. So we, you know, Sharia law, like in the state of Tennessee where I live now, they've outlawed Sharia law. Now, the fact that they had to do that because they saw around the world or in our country, even in cities where people want to implement that, it's insane. I've just never imagined that that would be a question that we would have to be dealing with. So I think,
that's the fact that they would, any religious law, like the United States, the separation of church and state has been so extremely successful because it allows the church to exist and be so powerful and the state to exist and be so powerful,
right,
separate from each other. The fact that you'd need to even,
yes,
you know, say that.
Right. So, but as I said, those values are about everyone living in peace and being able to live their lives and practice their faith in freedom and security and without fear of violence. That's basically what it is. It's the freedoms that we have. We can't take them for granted.
Where does those values come from for you? Now, of course, it's your faith.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to like go back to your childhood, early teens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, values come from somewhere.
Yeah. I raised Catholic. I'm one of five kids. My mother was one of 15 children. And her mother, my grandmother, was Catholic Mother of the Year for the United States, and she and my grandfather got medals from the Pope.
Well, you have to break that down. This is incredible. Catholic yeah. Mother of the Year.
Yeah, she was really just an incredibly powerful woman who had these 15 children, and she was a convert to Catholicism. The converts are always very, very gung-ho. And she was
May I ask, convert from?
She was probably just Lutheran or something. Mm-hmm. And so she was on every board, every committee in Cleveland, Ohio. She had this huge, roster of organizations that she was chairing or she was on the board of. So she was just a real powerful go-getter type woman. So maybe that's, I got her, DNA. And, we were a pretty religious household.
Like, and she got a medal from the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
That is quite incredible.
Yeah, I don't even know if that prize exists anymore. I have about 100 first cousins on my mom's side because all 15 kids had between 5 and 10 kids themselves. So
it's a nice Jewish family.
Well, I think it gives me, I kind of have this sense that I have this tribe that I come from, mm-hmm. And that gives you a lot of sense of security and purpose and identity in this world, right? That we're from this people. But my mother went to Mass every day. We had pictures of Jesus and crucifixes and statues of Mary at our house. And so that's how we grew up. And my oldest sister is actually a nun of the Dominican Order in Nashville. I think that's where all that comes from. That's why I think it's so important, that it really gave me this just sense of I know who I am in the world, and I know who I serve. I know who made me, and I who my creator is, and that I'm here for a purpose, that I am known to in eternity, that I'm known, and that connection, to be connected to the one who made you and who knows you better than you know yourself, gives you a confidence that you can have faith in him to guide you. And that it's, for me, that, God is the one in control. So it's, even if things look bleak, I already know we have the victory and that God is behind us. And so there's nothing to fear, actually.
I have to tell you, and we kind of mentioned this a bit before we started recording, as someone who lacks this belief in God, mm-hmm. and it's not a belief that I've lost. I've mm-hmm. never had that belief. It is a bit enviable to see that that conviction and that hope. But this is why it might make my question very weird coming from someone like me. If we zoom out for a second, there has been over the past few decades a drop in religious activity in the United States, Christian, Jewish, mm-hmm. Hindu, Muslim, just the church, the mosque, the synagogue, the temple, whatever it is, plays a smaller and smaller role in people's lives.
Yes, that's a problem.
I wanted to hear what you think about this, because it seems like for you it was such a big part of, you used the word, I know who I am.
Yeah.
So it's not just a part of your social life, or it's a part of understanding who you are.
Yes.
Now, of course, I understand that coming as an atheist, asking why is religion not as big
right.
might shock people, but I am really interested. Well, what's happening?
I think people, this is interesting. Like, for instance, in the UK, church is almost non-existent, there. It's a very small population of actual practicing Christians. And people get incensed when a church is turned into a mosque, but they haven't been using that church. Like, if you abandon your faith, something else is going to come in and take its place, right? And so I think that that's a lot of what's happening, is that we've kind of taken it for granted. Everything in our country is deeply entwined with Christianity. Our laws, the way we have all shared these values. And part of that was because everybody practiced their faith, and it's people are not doing it. And so it's not being passed down from generation to generation. They don't understand the importance of these Christian values, or Judeo-Christian values, however you want to say it. And so they're not seeing the importance of it. They're not seeing the importance of going to church. And so we're losing that part of our identity, and it's being taken over by Muslims who practice very faithfully and are multiplying. So I think that it's important. And I think we are seeing more, especially, again, since Charlie Kirk was shot, there's something happened, and it woke people up. And a lot more people started looking inward and upward to examine what's important, because I think they see true evil now taking place in our country. And what do you do when you're faced with this kind of unexplainable evil? You have to look for the spiritual answer to that. And so I think we are actually seeing a growth now, especially in Christianity. But I think October 7th also made a lot of Jewish people go back and look at their identity from a spiritual point of view also.
Right. So I feel like you said, like, from a little kid, you're the one running for the fight. You are an openly faithful Christian woman in entertainment industry. That's already makes you an outsider.
Yeah.
You've been speaking up against anti-Semitism and for Israel. That already makes you an outsider in your industry. And you live in Nashville, not Hollywood.
As of 2020, yeah. Also pro-life. That's also not popular in Hollywood.
But even there, and I read, and correct me if I'm wrong, when you say you're pro-life, it's not just about the beginning of life, it's also the end of life, right? So you're at least consistent, right?
Yes.
You're against abortions of, you know, of certain levels, but you're also against the death penalty and euthanasia.
Yeah.
How did you succeed? You know, and you've had a long and very successful career, like being, you know, to be blunt, a pain in the butt for the industry. And
well,
I'm sure for many of your colleagues and co-stars.
Well,
and
I mean, first of all, I think it's just far as working with people. I love what I do, and I love Hollywood. And, you know, when you're doing a show, all that people really care about is you show up on time, you know your lines, you're kind to everybody, especially the crew, you're fun to work with, you've got talent. And you're trying, and everybody has the same goal, which is let's keep this show going so we all have jobs. So that's the bottom line when we're on a set. And, you know, I do that well, and everybody I work with has done it well and been very kind and wonderful, and we might have different opinions, but when you're working, you're just working. And so that doesn't really come into play. Politics doesn't really come into play. But when I moved to LA from New York, I was like 28 or 29, no car, no agent, no manager, one commercial on a reel. So I had nothing. And I'll tell you the exact thing that happened. I went with a church to a weekend in Mexico working at an orphanage. And we were laying down a lawn for them and fixing the sewer, and we were having a party for them. And when I came back, and I was living in my cousin's girlfriend's mother's back bedroom in West Hollywood.
Cousin girlfriend's mother.
Back bedroom. And I had such an overwhelming sense of peace that I had never felt before. And up to that time, it was like I had to be an actress or that's it. I was going to kill myself if I wasn't successful. And I realized that I had really made that my idol, that acting was my idol, and that's what I was living for. And I got this great sense of peace after working at this orphanage. And in that little back bedroom, I said to God, okay, you know what? I could go back to that orphanage and just work there for the rest of my life. I'll just give over this acting to you. I'm getting auditions, but I'm going to give it to you. And you tell me where to go. You tell me if I should go back to Mexico or I should just keep doing these auditions. And the auditions kept coming, and I kept working, and I kept working, and got better and better jobs. And so years later, I'm working with an organization called World Vision Christian Aid Organization, and I'm in Uganda. And I realized that that prayer in that back bedroom, either, you know, I'll go and help in third world countries or I'll be an actor, he gave me both on a much larger scale than I could ever have imagined. So I was still acting and had these two long-running shows that were wonderful shows, really well-written, beautiful people to work with. And I'd been to Uganda and Rwanda and Zambia and Sierra Leone and refugee camps in Jordan through World Vision. So God was so gracious, and he said, I've just been waiting for you to give this over to me so I could do it the way I want to do it for you, which he did, which was a much better plan than I had for myself. I never imagined.
You had a good agent.
Yes, it's the best agent. So for me, that's how it evolved. It's like I had always loved God, believed in God, thought I was doing, you know, what God wanted me to do as an actor. But I had made too much of an idol of it. So when I gave it over to him, then he gave it back to me in the appropriate way that was much more effective in the world. And he was so gracious that he allowed me to have these incredible shows. And then he used that platform to bring me here today.
I love that. But I do want to push back just a tiny bit, if that's okay. You mentioned that when you're doing a show, politics aside, it's all about being nice, being professional, being a good actor, right? Yeah. Like, that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
But then the show airs, and then there are award ceremonies, and people make outrageous political claims, and then they sign outrageous political letters, and then it seems, at least from the outside, and I may be getting this all wrong, that the politics or the virtue signaling aspect of politics is a big part of entertainment industry these days. Am I getting a wrong sense? Has this always been the case? Is this something new?
You know, that it's interesting because I think it's been the case for a while that people are more outspoken. But I remember, see, I'm old, so I remember going back to watching the Oscars. And I think Marlon Brando had
famously won but didn't show up.
Sent the Indian gal to accept. So that's in the 70s, right? So there have always been activists in Hollywood. I think it's gotten amplified with social media and just the way we've expanded marketing and PR and stuff in all those years. And there's still a lot of people who just, and I don't think this is a wrong choice to make, where they just, this is my career, I'm keeping that, I'm not going to speak up on anything. There's a lot of people who just keep it really clean, right? And they're not going to say anything. And, you know, that's a choice. I think it's a legitimate choice, actually. I don't expect everybody to be doing what I'm doing. I just feel like I was specifically called for this, but I understand people have kids and homes that they're having to pay for and school and their families they have to take care of. So I understand where they're coming from. I don't quite understand the people that are signing on with the I have to say pro Hamas. Because
you have to be truthful.
Yes. That's what, I don't think that people would see it that way. I don't think people who are doing that would say that they're pro-Hamas. But the fact that they would never, that they blame Israel for this whole situation, it's ridiculous because it's not true. I don't think Israel has ever started a war. This is all started by their constantly being attacked. Israel is constantly being attacked. And I also don't understand people in our industry who I find very talented and seemingly intelligent seem to check their brain at the door when it comes to something like this. And they'll just throw the word genocide around. They don't know what they're talking about. I don't understand it.
So how can people get involved in O7C?
Well, we have a website, o7c.org. You can sign up, give us your information, and we'll let you know what events we're doing. We're bringing a lot of Christians and Jewish people together in many ways in different cities. And I would say, though, people just, if you have social media, just speak up on your social media. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you don't have to have inflamed rhetoric. You don't have to be name calling. I never do any name calling. In my head, it sounds like a whole different thing. But I just, you know. Well,
can we get the mic inside your head just for a second?
Just for a minute. It's not pretty. So it's, you know, I mean, as I said, I'm kind of, you know, pugilistic in attitude, but I like to keep things civilized and intelligent. I just think there's so much just crazy nonsense out there, and people, you know, hatred is kind of a nice feeling. Does that sound strange? But people,
I think it's an addictive feeling.
It
it's
is.
Not necessarily a nice one, but it really is very addictive.
Yes, they, you know, it makes you feel a certain way, and you like to go on because there's sort of no consequences for going online and spewing awful stuff, you know. But I don't really feel affected by it. I'm a big I hide and block replies a lot. Mm-hmm. Takes up a little too much of my time, ask my husband. I think just it means so much to Jewish people if you just reach out and say, I see you, I understand what you're going through, or I would like to understand what you're going through if you don't understand it. And be there for people. It means the world to Jewish people. There's only 15 million Jewish people in the whole world. And in Israel, they're surrounded by all these countries that want to take them down. And you can't, we in the United States can't imagine living that way. And when you go over there, it's so beautiful, and there's so much life, and there's so much joy. And, you know, Israel is sending their sons and daughters into battle. They're losing their lives to keep this cancerous, radical Islamism from spreading. They're in the on the front lines. We need to be very grateful for that, and then we need to give them all the support that we can, because they're helping the whole world by fighting this.
What's next for you? What's next for the October 7 Coalition?
You know, we continue to do events. We keep doing interfaith events, and we're also starting to focus on students. The younger, the better. By the time they get to college, they've already been propagandized, I think. You know, so high school students are really important to reach. So working with those groups and supporting groups that are educating young people is part of our mission.
That's extremely important. Well, we can go on and on, but we are on a schedule. We are going to end with the Here I Am lightning round, a series of rapid fire questions.
Okay.
There are no right or wrong answers.
Okay.
So the first thing that comes to mind, Patricia Heaton, what is one thing people don't know about you?
Let's see, what is on? Well, I have. When I'm working, I have a habit of belching right before I go on and right after I come off of a scene.
Every scene?
Pretty much. I think it's something to do with how I breathe from my diaphragm when I'm working.
Is there a real cut of just you belching on every...
I do,
you
it
know,
off camera.
You know, in the middle. And
right.
We should
but
get
that.
But
my family will also tell you, they know when I'm home because they'll... They'll hear it. My father always said, it's better to burp and bear the shame than not to burp and bear the pain.
Oh, I love that. I love that. What is one thing people don't know about Irish Catholics?
Oh, don't know about Irish Catholics. Well, I didn't know how anti-Semitic their government is, but I think everybody knows everything about Irish Catholics. Too much drinking, a lot of poetry, fun to be with. All my Irish friends are very fun to be with.
All right. Drinking, poetry, and belching. I like this. When was the last time you cried?
Yesterday.
What happened?
Yeah. In the calendar of the Catholic Church, it's All Souls Day, so it's kind of the opposite of Halloween. So it's remembering everybody that passed. And so I lost my brother 2 years ago, and my parents are gone. My in-laws are gone. So, and when I was in Israel, we had a beautiful meeting with them, Rachel Goldberg. And in thinking about All Souls Day, she's been on my mind a lot of what the burden she's carrying and all the people who have lost children during October 7th. So it was a really beautiful mass, and it was beautiful and very moving and comforting too, because we all know we're going to be united again at the end. Mm-hmm. So, it felt a little heavy yesterday. Yesterday was a kind of a heavier day because there is a lot of suffering in the world. I think, you know, in our country, we're so blessed with such prosperity, and it's such a great country, and our lives are relatively easier than a lot of people have it. And I don't think we always understand until you go there and you see what people are going through. So
what do you think your parents and brother would have said observing what you've been doing in the past 2 years?
Yeah, my mother was really sort of active. She died when I was 12, which I also think prepared me for a lot of this, because I am always aware that loss is right around the corner. And so that it's kind of sobering on the one hand, and it's very freeing on the other hand, because you're ready for it. So, but I think she would have, I think I take after her a lot, and my grandmother.
We should get a medal from the Pope.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I have met him.
the current one?
No, Francis. Hmm. Yeah. Wow.
If you could be invited over for Shabbat dinner with any person in history, dead or living, mm-hmm. who would that be?
Well, I was thinking in terms of like Jewish people, and I am such a huge fan of St. Paul. Not a lot of Catholics are. They think he's really mm-hmm. a little bit rough. But everything he says is so beautiful. And especially in the book of Romans, you can see where he calls Christians to not be arrogant about their faith and to not hold it over Jewish people, that God created the Jewish people to bring our Savior into the world. And we are not to be arrogant that we've been blessed by that, but to, you know, pray for our Jewish brothers and sisters who are also going to come into the fold. Mm. And so I think it's really important for Christians to understand that. But Paul is just a wonderful person. As I said, he had that quote about standing, and he was really on fire for the Jewish people, which is why God chose him to bring, you know, Gentiles into the fold, because he's really on fire for God.
What is your favorite holiday?
Easter Sunday, and then 4th of July right after that. Mm. But I love any holiday where it doesn't involve me gift wrapping, which is why Christmas is my least favorite.
Which answers my next question.
My least favorite holiday. Oh, I literally get, I go into a depression. I'm probably the only one of just like, oh, we have to put up decorations. Oh, we have to buy gifts, which I buy. You know, my boys are, I have four sons and they're older, and I try to get them stuff, and I shop and shop and shop, and I have to keep all the receipts because I end up having to return everything, and then they've gotten nothing after all I've gone. So I keep trying to institute a no-presents Christmas, and my husband won't let me do it. He's always ended up buying stuff, but yeah.
Well, you can give to charity in their names. You have grandkids?
Not yet.
I think you're going to enjoy gift wrapping once you have grandkids and seeing the joy of them opening mm-hmm. them. Patricia, when do you feel safest?
I always feel safe. I always feel safe. Mm. I'm very much, I really try to live like in the present and don't worry too much about the future. I'm happiest around my boys, my family.
Are they all in Nashville?
They're all in LA, so we have to keep going back and forth, yeah.
Yeah. I think I know the answer to the next question, but what gives you hope?
Well, we already know that God has won this victory. Jesus has risen. It is finished, as he said on the cross. His last words were, it is finished. It's done. And we have to get a lot of battles to get through. But it's like the Lord of the Rings. When you see this little band of people that are pulled together, where you have hobbits and you have elves and you have humans, and it's a little tiny band, and, you know, Samwise says to Frodo, "There's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for." And that's mm-hmm. what we're doing. And we know that we have the victory. So every day you just stand up and ask God, how can I be part of your victory plan?
Finally, every episode, I urge the listeners to donate to one charity that does good in Israel, the Jewish diaspora, or the world in large. Mm-hmm. Where would you want people to donate to this week?
Well, after 07C, Ilam is an organization that provides mental health services for teens who are going through trauma. And, you know, we've heard the last time I was at the, I spoke at their fundraiser, and Roy was the, was speaking, one of the survivors of Nova, and he recently took his own life a few weeks ago. Mm. And he was such a strong person, and he was the spokesperson for a lot of the Nova survivors. And I think there's at least 60 survivors that have taken their lives, and they're going to need a lot of help going forward. And the ripple effect of October 7th on many, many families in Israel and in the United States and around the world is very big. And we've heard that people feel like there's not enough help for them. So I think that's a super important one to help people with the trauma.
Ilam, E-L-E-M.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I should say, I read this statistic that really affected me, that said that for every casualty of terror in Israel, there's 7 friends and family members affected.
Yes.
So if you multiply the thousands that, you know, the 1,200 that were murdered on October 7th, but the thousands that were attending, and you then multiply that by 7, we're talking about tens of thousands of people that were directly affected.
Yeah.
Patricia, where can people find you? Where can they find the October 7 Coalition?
We're on social media as the official O7C on Instagram, and then o7c.org online. You can visit us there.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, you already have a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. I think it's time for us to start a Star of David Walk of Fame and give you a star there.
I agree. And
maybe we'll do it in Tel Aviv with all the other amazing Jewish and non-Jewish actors that have been standing up. I was nervous starting, but you made this very, very easy for me.
Good.
So thank you so much.
Yeah.
I'm just very glad to say here I am with Patricia Heaton.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Michael Greenspan, Shai's father-in-law. I'd like to thank you for listening to the Here I Am podcast with Shai Davidai. Here I Am is recorded at The Cave Production House in Hackensack, New Jersey, and is brought to you in partnership with Abby Sophia and Adamit Productions. You can find us on Instagram, YouTube, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'd also like to extend my deepest gratitude to everyone at Adamit Productions for turning Shai's dream into a reality, and to all our donors and partners for their unwavering commitment to fighting for Jewish civil rights. Most importantly, I'd like to thank you, our listeners. Let's be honest, none of this would have been possible without your support and dedication. Showing up is half the battle. Thank you for showing up. Thank you for being there. Thank you for saying, "Here I am."
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.